The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is October 21st, 2015, and we are sponsored by Dr. William Wong's Essentials, www.docsprefer.com. Dr. Wong's on here monthly, and he sponsors me for Iceland, and I thank him for that. Next, Sorenex.com, 803-978-2253, extension 111. Richard and Bert have both done the same thing with sponsoring. They sent me a beautiful diamond bar. Check it out. You can use it for the power rack and the press overhead and the power rack. There's nothing like it. Just brutal. So go out to Sorenex.com and check that out. This is for New York State residents. Hearts Collision here. HeartsCollision.com. As everybody knows, I'm training their son, Alex and Lori's son, Little Al. Over here, he's put on 10 pounds in 14 weeks. His basketball coach says he can't believe how fast and how much he's filled out already. He's only going to get better. He's a great kid. You can contact them at 518-477-7937. Tell them Eric sent you. Next, we got our good friend Donnie G and Fardino. That's www.8xclub.com. This is the guy. He sent me these clubs. It's like an Indian club, only a little smaller. And you can go anywhere from 2 to 25 pounds. You screw right into it. It's got, like, knobs. You drop the weight right on the knobs, turn the top back down on it. The thing is phenomenal. My shoulders feel great. I've had it not even a week yet. So thanks, Donnie, for that. Go out to adexclub.com. Also, the top 10 ways to build mind and muscle, that's free on FiorelloBarbellCo.com. The e-book's downloading like crazy. All you got to do is leave your email address, and you can get it. It's an MP4. Next, Strength Times Power Equals Success in the Winner's Circle, both on FiorelloBarbellCo.com. We are getting ready, and they are semi-being launched right now. These are the two best things I've done to date. Strength Times Power Equals Success is all filmed in HD with me narrating each exercise. And I used this program to knock 43 pounds off Dennis, who was pre-diabetic. We knocked him from 267 to 224 in 6 months. Amazing stuff. The Winner's Circle, big life changer too, 27 to 34 minutes of audio. I go through my beginnings, through stuff that I feel that is valuable for training, big hardcore stuff, big weight stuff, but the main thing is learn how to control your mind, learn how to do the things you need to do, and really get into it. These are two life-changing programs. Go out to FiorelloBarbellCo.com and take a peek at them. Also, one of my biggest things here, obviously, is sponsorship, so we can keep this show really rolling. And for $500 a month, you know, I'm doing anywhere from 5 to 15 podcasts a week. You're being mentioned in the beginning and the end of the show, sometimes in the middle. Depends who we're talking to. And obviously, you know, $30 of this goes to muscular dystrophy, which Fiorello Barbell and Motivation and Muscle are both basically dedicated. My brother's name, James Fiorello. Jimmy died of muscular dystrophy at a young age, a young teenager. Same thing. He got a cold, went to pneumonia. They couldn't save him. They did everything they could. That $30 goes for a flu shot. And if you live up in the Northeast right now, it's getting mighty cold. These kids are worth it, believe me. And, you know, we're going to grow bigger and bigger with MDA as we grow our 1 million plus listeners. You know, the more we do this, the more we can contribute to them, the more we can get your company out there, and we want to be around for 25 years working with you. So give us a shot, and I promise you, you'll get everything I got. So that's out in Fiorello Barbell Co. or MotivationMuscle.com. Chris Bigelow does everything, 800-687-1609, MonsterDevelopment.com. Today, our monthly guest, and this is one of my favorites here. This guy and me, we tread pretty hard when we get together. I got Mike Gillette on with me today. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Mike, he's been on here plenty, but we're going to really get into him today. He's been a bodyguard for Fortune 100 CEOs. Obviously, he's a writer. He's a trainer. This guy's martial arts. He was a police officer. He dove out of airplanes. I mean, what can I say? Mike comes from some pretty rough beginnings, and Mike has succeeded beyond success. Mike sent me his new book, Mind Boss, and I'm going to thank Mike too. I've been thanking everybody on the show. Mike, I want to formally thank you verbally here for your support and for being on the show this year. And you know, we're looking to a big 2016, and I can't thank you enough. It means a lot to me with everybody that's been on, and you know, I know they're standing behind me, and everybody wants to see the success. So I want to thank you for that. Mind Boss, Mike sent me a PDF last night to read through. I have more respect for Mike now than I did, and I'm not a guy that hands out respect or love for anybody real easy. Anybody that would knows me in my family or who are friends of mine, I don't give compliments real easy because I'm a big believer, and you better really earn your way around me. My father was very hard on me with that, and I'm glad he was. But Mike's got some great stuff, and we're going to talk about Mind Boss today. But before we get going with this, I want to welcome Mike to Motivation and Muscle. Mike, great to have you here, brother.
Eric, always a pleasure, sir. And I appreciate your kind words a moment ago.
Well, you earned them, believe me. Give everybody a short bio, and then let's get right into Mind Boss.
Okay. The Mike Gillette on the internet, the one that several websites refer to as the world's most dangerous man, I'm not making that up. I've got no connection to those websites. World records, or please believe it or not, all of that stuff suggests a particular kind of guy. And the most important thing I think that I can share with people is I was the opposite of that guy growing up in every conceivable way, not just physically, but psychologically as well. And really, the conditions of my upbringing were such that there was very little positivity, lots and lots of negative behaviors I saw getting reinforced over and over, and I absorbed so much of that. I became a very negative person in my young life, and I was replicating a lot of those same behaviors, a lot of those same crappy decisions, and it wasn't until an important development in my own life in 1981, where just because of a particular girl who I was trying to impress, who started doing things that she did, one of which was going to church, and that began the process of turning my life around. When that happened, I overcompensated. I made up for lost time, and I think I'm still doing that. Overkill is kind of my basic MO, and I started kind of easy just based on where I was at. I was a police officer after college, paid for college with a combination of Army money. That's the jumping out of airplanes that Eric alluded to. And also working nearly full-time hours while I was in college. My wife and I were married at that time. We had a baby. She was working full-time just to help make all of that happen. I became a police officer. I noticed I had sort of an interest and aptitude for training others, and I started developing that side of myself to the point where after 12 years of full-time law enforcement, my training activities, whether that was training other law enforcement or military personnel in those types of topics, or my expanding martial arts repertoire and talking to martial arts audiences, that was just taking me further and further away from home. I crossed over to the private sector in 2001 and started training people and consulting full time. And I was just really lucky over and over. And I did a lot of governmental consulting, a lot of private sector consulting for companies like United, JetBlue in the airline side post 9/11 for the Disney company. I did a lot of direct work billed to the Department of Homeland Security, vulnerability assessments, consulting projects. I wrote training curriculum that is still in use today for the Department of Homeland Security. My first written work was actually a DHS publication, which means it's free if you care to go looking for it online. It's protecting soft targets. It's for security personnel. All of my training work ultimately and quite accidentally led me into the bodyguarding realm, which you alluded to. That was 2006 through 2011. That's what I primarily was focused on. And we had a small client list. Most of our clients were recognizable simply by virtue of how wealthy they were. It was a very interesting time, became a very tedious time. It's a strange lifestyle when all you do is orbit these people, because your schedule changes on a whim and your own life starts to disappear. And at the age of 49, I realized that all of the DVDs I had planned, the lectures I wanted to do, the books I wanted to write were never going to happen unless I stepped away from that life. So I stepped away from that life, which was either brilliant or stupid, depending on how you think about math, because the math didn't really support that decision. But, you know, 3.5 years later, things have really picked up for me. So it turned out to be another sort of reckless but positive decision in my life, something I did quite a bit. So that's sort of the from there to here, and you mentioned the book, so I'm not going to get too far into any more details because I have no idea what your questions are going to be, Eric. So let's jump in.
Okay. Well, here's something, Mike, that I want to ask you. You know, I've already read this, and it's very, very interesting. And you know, I've been doing this a long time, and having good reminders and clear. The way you write very clearly, and by that I mean very easy to understand. I don't feel you're talking down to anyone when you're writing, because I feel like when I'm reading this, you and I are talking like we are on the podcast. But the big question is this: obviously, you've been a guy that's been involved in everything, and that just seems to be your MO. That just seems to be how you run. When did the first thought, or have you always wanted to write a some type of book detailing something that you feel very strongly about? Because I just want to lay the concrete right now. Now I'm going to go into the next big question, which is going to be passion, which you and I both understand, I think, pretty well. I think we both have a passion that you know, I haven't seen many people with this type of drive like this. So the book, what was this, even as a kid, I mean, you know, I'm reading about, you know, sleeping outside and this and that, and you went through a lot of turmoil, and you're getting to the next step, and you're doing this, and you're doing that. When did that book finally flash in your head to bring it out?
You know, nobody's ever asked me that, and I've never really thought about it. I allude to something towards the end of the book, when I was still very young, and, you know, I kind of went from being completely wrecked to, you know, sort of trying to resurrect myself in a sense. And I had this idea of who I wanted Mike Gillette to be. And I'm going to lose credibility with a lot of people in a second here, because I think my early model, like age 18 or so, was this. Think of an amalgamation of the characters that Chuck Norris played in his early movies. He kind of became big in the mid late 80s, you know, and then sort of, you know, just went on to his TV show. But he was a cult figure. He was making all of these bad low budget movies when I discovered him. And I started going to see those movies. And in those movies, you know, there was a lot of it that was attractive to me, because like Chuck, I'm a small guy. And Chuck was in those movies. He wasn't a guy who was getting, you know, wrapped up with women and, you know, your typical Hollywood leading man drama. He had the John Wayne approach. John Wayne was the same way. John Wayne was the guy, Chuck Norris was the guy, at least in those days, that came into a situation and solved problems, and that's all he did. That's all he was focused on. Didn't care about anything else. There was a focus there. And additionally, when through the process of narrative exposition in these films, you would find out what Chuck's background was. He was always playing Chuck Norris. I mean, you know, to be fair. But it was always some sort of quasi-law enforcement, sort of, you know, gee whiz military, mysterious martial arts. He was a guy who had done a lot of different things. And only in the last couple of years have I sort of, you know, kind of deconstructed where why I think the way I think is the way I think. And I can trace it to a couple of things. My early heroes, or role models, if you were, you know, kind of was this Chuck Norris guy. But when I was much younger, sort of junior high through high school, I had another person that was a real person who I was extremely enamored with, and that was Harry Houdini. Houdini was they call him the first superstar, because a superstar is somebody that only has one name. You know, the name Houdini was known around the world in the teens and the 20s, you know, before mass communication really existed, which is saying something. The thing about Houdini is he did all kinds of different things. Yeah, he was a magician. He was an escape artist. He would take on any challenge. He would do anything to himself physically to make those challenges come to fruition. You know, he became known as the guy who was debunking the spiritualists, you know, the mediums of the time, and testifying in Congress. He got involved in movies. He learned how to fly an airplane. He was the first person to pilot an airplane in the continent of Australia. He just did lots. You know, he was an athlete as a kid. When he was a preteen, he was apprenticing at a locksmith shop. You know, here was a guy who was always busting his hump, doing all kinds of stuff. And, you know, so there was lessons about work ethic, lessons about doing whatever you want just because you want to. He also wrote books. He wrote a number of books. So the people I think that I was always in, and again, he was a very physical dude who was small. And, you know, lots of kids I grew up with, you know, related to professional athletes, that sort of thing. That was not me, because I was as far away from an athlete as you could be as a kid. So that frame of reference, there, I had no connection to that. But the underdog, you know, the small guy, I mean, you read into Chuck's real life background, he was a small guy who wanted to be a badass and, you know, gravitated towards this new thing called, you know, Tang Soo Do, you know, just an early available Korean martial art. And that is, I think, why I am the way I am. I sort of embraced this. Now, in my mind, it's multidimensional. To the outsider, they're going to think, "Yeah, it's all variations of being a, you know, a violent brute and kind of, you know, kind of a knuckle dragger." Okay, I will never be able to explain myself to those people. But in my mind, the really interesting people are the people who do everything. I always wanted to be that guy, and the people who I spend my time with are oftentimes people who have, you know, really hit life's buffet hard, and they've gone back for seconds or thirds up and down the table. And I think that's me.
No, and it, from what everything I read, I mean, and you know, I've followed you, and you're on the show enough now, I understand it more so, and. You know, getting into that life's buffet, especially, I'm just going to say something with me quick, and then we're going to go right in this, but I'm going to make this analogy work kind of towards you in some ways. You pretty much know what I do here, stones and just severe rack work and carrying big things and lifting and throwing stuff and all this other stuff that I've parsed into at one time was just lifting weights. That's it. And I got to tell you, Mike, I love the brutality of it. It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. And when you can be on a run where you're, you know, you're healthy and you're mentally sound and you go out there, man, and you're just cracking everything. I mean, the heavens can hear you. It's so loud. I could never envision my life or any of my goals or any of my triumphs or any of the stuff that I'm involved with now, where I am, I jumped out of bed at 4:45 this morning to read what you sent me on the Mind Boss. I was so excited. I was going to read it last night, but I was like, nope, I want to be fresh. I want to jump out of bed. And this is where this sense of when we're talking about, you know, people are like, well, you're doing this, this, and this, and you're scattered all over. And the same with me, not to the degree you are, but I'm pretty scattered with things and everything. But I can seem to pull it all together and always have something very concrete for you or any of the listeners out there, or when I'm writing on the blog and all that. And that's become a practice, a learning, a way of just, you know, it becomes concrete. That's what it does. And when you're writing about these things, and I'm reading this Mind Boss this morning, I'm like, holy shit, man, this sounds like me in so many instances. Or, you know, I've talked to either clients or, you know, you meet somebody, you don't even know them, and they'll say, you know, we got into some last show. Hey, you lift, what do you do? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Next thing you know, you're sitting down and you're talking to them for an hour. If you got an hour, it's great. But this is going to move right into what I'm talking about. You start out in chapter one with passion. And I've already told you right now, you got a lot of passion out of me this second. Passion. Invoke it to me. Tell me what your passion is. What do you feel that people that read this book are going to get with the first chapter, just with passion alone?
Well, I think if you look at the way the sections of the book are divided up, you know, I use a lot of alliteration, which simply means there are a lot of P words that describe sort of the five steps. And yep. It's a convenient way to allow people to remember that. But I lead the charge, if you will, with passion, because I think that in order to get people either connected initially or perhaps to reconnect, if they're a more mature person and life has been going on a while for them like it has for me, I think as we become adults, we're sort of encouraged to kind of, you know, intellectualize life. And, you know, be very objective, you know, be sensible. And, you know, what's the behavior that we associate with being young? You know, well, impulsivity, mm-hmm. you know, being mm-hmm. overly passionate. Well, you know, kids, they're just so emotional. Now, obviously, that can be taken to extremes where it's not productive. But the other extreme of that is being so analytical that you kind of forget that part of yourself, the part that was passionate mm-hmm. about doing things. So that's why that is how I lead off the book. It's, in essence, Mike Gillette giving people permission to be passionate.
No, I agree.
And it needs to be – now, just because I give someone permission, so, well, Mike Gillette, who the hell are you?
Right.
Just a guy who wishes you well, who wants you to have a life that you're excited about. And some people will respond to that and they will run with it, and other people will just say, I don't get it. And, you know, that's just the nature of imparting input to the world. But that's what the passion is all about.
Okay.
For me,
okay.
What I'm most passionate about is not losing passion for anything.
No, I agree.
I think that is the more emotionally connected I am to things, which – some people find sort of, you know, counterintuitive, because, you know, they see pictures of Mike Gillette. Oh, he looks like a stone face. He looks like, you know, a brute, a small brute, but a brute. And, you know, he looks angry because he's always grimacing when he's bending stuff. And it's like, well, of course I look angry in those. I kind of look like I've got a stomach ache in most of those shots. But those are moments for me of tremendous satisfaction. Everything I do because I've got some type of emotional connection to it. You know, things aren't satisfying to me. And, you know, I have gotten myself, because I live a certain way, I think a certain way, I feel emotionally engaged with all kinds of things. You know, you were using the analogy a moment ago with really hard training. A gentleman I've been communicating with more regularly, who's, you know, kind of a veteran like myself, and no stranger to hard training like you are, is Marty Gallagher. And he makes those same types of analogies. I mean, he literally feels connected to the universe when he's doing those things. And these are such simple seeming, primitive looking activities, but if you approach them, you know, and people use phrases like, you know, in sort of a mindful or a zen-like way, you know, whatever term makes sense for you, I just look at it, I'm just being open to the experience. Everything can be so much more valuable, I think, than we realize it. And that's not the sort of sentiment that people expect a tough guy to be sharing. It sounds kind of squishy and, you know, kind of Tony Robbins-ish, but it's true. And I think one of the reasons I feel as happy around people as I do, and I do, I like people. Sometimes we like to hit each other, but it's all it's all good. Is because I'm very much in touch with that part of myself. I mean, I do the things that feed my intellectual self. I obviously pursue things that feed the physical side of myself. But, you know, I need to be emotionally engaged to be my whole self. And that's passion.
Totally. And you know, not only that, you know, and you're talking about Marty and stuff, and I know that feeling, man. It's a magnetic feeling that you have to experience. I don't know how I can even describe it to everybody out there. When you're that lit up and that tuned into something, there are forces around you don't even understand that it feel like you're latching onto it and it's latching onto you. And it's like whatever's going to happen is going to happen. It's just going to go. It's a drive. It, you know, you talk primal, whatever. You know, I know that word's tossed around a lot, but there is something very, very intrinsic to that. It's I like yesterday I was telling you I was working out. You know, I'm doing one-sided training, and we're going to get right into preparation because I know we're squeezed here. But there's just some things you do. I mean, when I decided to do that one-sided stuff, that just came out of the blue to me. I didn't think about any of that stuff. I've never done one-sided training. I've read about it before, but, you know, big deal. Well, I've done it, man, and it's like it's one of the best things I've ever done. And yesterday, it was just like anything I put my hand on, I could move. I could pull. I could push. You don't always have days like that. But you know something? It all goes back to one thing. It's the passion for what you love and what's going to drive you. And that's going to steer us right into preparation now, one of the big P's here. Mike, when you're thinking about big, you know, goals and you know, you've got ideas and, you know we've got to put planning together, which is coming up next. But how do you get how would you tell somebody that is just saying, well, I just can't prepare. I just can't seem to get it done. Besides wanting to slap them in the forehead. What do we want to tell them here? Right.
I mean, well, you know, preparation is really kind of getting your mind right.
Yep.
And so much of the time we want things. I mean, and I've been this person myself, so I have empathy for the condition. You know, we want things, but we just sort of want them because we want them, and we want them without cost.
Yep.
And nothing of value, obviously, you know, can be had at no cost.
Yep.
So it's you know, there's a lot of guys who want to be as strong as you.
Yep.
There's very few people that will do what's necessary to make that happen. And that's really preparation. That is emotional and psychological preparation. It's sort of accepting that if you want to be whatever this thing is, it's going to take everything you have. You know, unless you're like that 0.01%, and I've met some people like this, and they're, you know, they're amazing and annoying. There are some people who literally can do anything. I met a few when I was working with the Cirque du Soleil 2 weeks ago. They literally, they see it done once and they can do it better than the person who's teaching it to them. You know,
absolutely.
But for those of us who are mortals, you know, whether it's you know, music, engineering, lifting weights, you know, there is hard work to be done. It's easy to want something, you know, just like when you talk to athletes, it's easy to want to win. If more people would do what's necessary, you know, to win, you know, the level of play increases all around, and you know, people are more engaged in what they're doing. They're experiencing more reward and so on and so forth. So, I mean, preparation, you know, at its simplest is simply that, you know, where are you in relation to what you want? And are you where you need to be? And if not, how can we get you, you know, to that place so that you can reasonably set about the hard work of getting from point A to point B?
Yeah, well, that's what you said. If you can prepare, you're going to get there. And I can tell you firsthand, preparation is necessary to get to wherever you want to get and whatever you want to do. Planning. This is great because this is where most people fall very, very short. You know, they're usually laying down looking up when we're talking about planning. Give us a formula, something to get them, you know, at least started. And we know that's the most important thing, one foot in front of the other.
You know, it's interesting when I share information such as this, and I have done so in lectures, and I've done so in a video package that we've talked about in the past, the Psychology of Strength. A lot of people say, Mike, you're not saying anything I didn't already know. And, you know, setting a goal, figuring, you know, deconstructing, you know, what are the, you know, the short-term steps, longer-term steps, what's your performance criteria, how are you going to know when to get there, you know, are you going to need to adjust course along the way, and how will you do that? People will say, yeah, that's been written about a lot, and I'll say, yep, but are you doing it?
Because
if you're not doing it, you obviously needed to hear it at least one more time.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the interesting to me and unglamorous aspect of you know, I put this book, Mind Boss, in the category of mental training. It's, you know, mental, you know, a big part of mental training is mental doing, is mental practicing, is mental follow through. You know, the mind is the body is the mind. You know, all the planning in the world is not going to work if you don't execute. All the enthusiasm in the world is not going to help you if you don't plan well. Because, you know, speaking as somebody who has littered the landscape with all kinds of non-productive effort, you know, when I've, in my earlier days, when I was less strategic, you know, I worked really hard and sometimes didn't get much of anywhere. Despite looking busy and despite feeling tired, I had to learn that. And it was, you know, planning and executing a plan in the very early days was hard for me because I was a scatterbrained kid. You know, I had zero study habits, horrible grades all through my young academic life, to the point where when I was 15, I was tested by the school district psychologist because there were concerns that I might actually be a moron. that I'm not exaggerating. It wasn't that. I just didn't really, I didn't, you know, care about much at the time. And that makes people non-productive. And even if I did back then, I just wasn't, you know, mentally equipped with skills that would, you know, get me anywhere in a systematic fashion. So planning is simply planning. You know, it's you need to have something. It does, and it doesn't have to even be the perfect plan. You know, start with a plan. As the, you know, one of our most gifted military tacticians of, you know, in recent history, George Patton, said, "A good plan executed violently today is better than the perfect plan executed 3 days from now."
Exactly. Well, and I'll quote, before we go into patience, one of my favorite college professors, Frank Klein. You know, I had him all from all my business courses. Fail to plan to fail. He used to drive that into our heads constantly, and I obviously can tell it worked because I never forgot it. So that's a big thing right there. Mike, patience. Patience is a big thing that I wish I had a little bit more of at times when I'm out, especially training, and you've got those shit nights and days or whatever you're doing and nothing's working and you're pissing off and swearing at everything and you're like, I'm going to quit, I'm done with this, and you know damn well 10 minutes later you're going to say, why would I say that, and this and that. But, you know, we've all gone through this, and if you're – we're going to bring that word, the other P word up, passionate about what you do and what you believe – how much patience do you need, and how do you get the discipline to become patient so you don't end up having these crazy ass outbursts and catastrophes that usually happen a lot?
You know, I think patience is probably the most difficult quality for anyone to sort of manifest. And particularly, and I think I allude to this in the book, it is not something that is encouraged with young people.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, between the culture and between sort of the technology that drives the culture, everything is immediate, everything is on demand. Just living life a couple of decades ago as a kid you know, patience was built into certain things. There were certain times of the year that you did certain things. I mean, people went on vacation one time a year. You know, they were perpetually getting away from this or that. Once your favorite show was over in mid-May, you had to wait the entire summer to find out what happened on that last episode. You know, there were only three channels plus PBS when I was a kid. You couldn't make long distance calls until a certain time of the night because it was so much cheaper to do it then. So, I mean, there was just a lot of waiting built in to all kinds of things. There was waiting built into meal preparation, to an extent that, you know, most people now would just freak out. Yeah, but I'm hungry now. And eating the stuff that you can eat now is not helping you. So in the absence of some of those, you know, culturally reinforced or technology reinforced, you know, means of developing patience, the people who really have an opportunity to practice that are, you know, musicians, athletes, particularly if they're, you know, one of my big frames of reference for athletics is gymnastics. And gymnastics is a patience game. You start really young and you train every day and slow progress because you're trying to master the impossible. You know, it doesn't matter how that basketball gets in the hoop. You know, you can look like poop doing it. Doesn't matter. Some sports are less forgiving. But even becoming really good at basketball, or, you know, these kids who are learning how to play golf. You know, slow incremental progress. And then when the breakthroughs has come, they have a lot of worth. And the problem with guys like you and I, because we are so passionate, we sometimes, I think, try to outwork and accelerate development so that patience is not something that we have to cultivate. I mean, it was one of the reasons why I had such a horrible time recovering from my injuries when I was smashed up in a climbing accident in 84. Tried to accelerate the healing process, not realizing that I was just, you know, a moron who used to jump out of airplanes and was not medically trained. So when I would think to myself, well, those doctors don't know what they're talking about, it was I who was, you know, the biggest idiot. So I ignored everything they said, and I did exactly what I thought, you know, a badass would do. And instead of being a badass, I was being, and this is something I've done many times in my life, I was being a dumbass. And, but, you know, working real hard and not being patient. And, you know, sometimes patience is, hey, the end goal is so attractive, we just can't wait. In the case of me being smashed up, I was so terrified of staying smashed up, staying weak, staying broken, staying fragile, that I couldn't stop myself from, you know, the recklessness with which I tried to rehabilitate myself. You know, somehow I did manage to survive that eventually, but I know that I slowed the process.
Yeah.
However, there were also lessons there. the amount of pain and problems that I overcame, you know, in that 4.5 years, that was my patience lesson. I think that was really my first big patience lesson. Because prior to being smashed up, once I hit the military, you know, when I sort of, you know, 180'd my young life, I was going hard and fast and everything was going well. I mean, really well. So when something seemingly, you know, almost life-ending happened, I had no coping skills for that.
Right.
And my challenges were not just physical. They were very much psychological. So there were, you know, the satisfaction that I felt once I was able to move beyond that was something that I still haven't fully appreciated. You know, the fact that, you know, some years after that, I was even able to return to airborne status in the military was extraordinary for me.
Absolutely.
So, it's cultivating patience is worth it, but it sucks.
Yeah, it does. And not only that, and, you know, not only that, I'll tell you what. Like I talked about, I think, with you on the last show, I was saying there's so many things you don't understand at the time, and then maybe 2 years down the road, you're like, now it makes sense and all that. That's how it is with me with everything. I mean, I remember when I tore the bicep in Iceland, the first thing I said to the doctor is, am I ever going to lift again? I didn't even give a shit about the arm.
Yeah.
It was like, am I ever going to do that again? I had to learn patience. I'm a lot better with it, but I'm never going to be perfect with it because my DNA just does not run well with that.
Yeah.
But that's for another time. The big thing here is the payoff out of the whole with this Mind Boss, you know, book that you wrote. This is the big. This chapter is real big. I mean, they're all killer, but the payoff. This is where everything you've put together for however long you've been doing it. Mike, give us the payoff, you know, the goals. We know we want the success. And then we're always going to want to probably go do something else. In my case, that's always the thing, you know, the year down the road, the 6 months down the road. But what is payoff to you now?
Well, payoff is I think it's really two things. The having goals, you know, and I'm one of those people that if I don't have something that I'm working on, I'm not happy. You know, and I'm restless until I figure out something, you know, to have as a goal. But what I've learned for me and, you know, talking with people that, you know, things start to look different at different ages.
Yep.
And the goal is merely a means of it's like a pedometer, you know, the thing that people strap on to measure the steps they take. To me, that's what a goal is. I mean, I've had some small goals. I've had some really big goals, but every time I've hit a goal, I've always been surprised to this day that, you know, the world doesn't change. Well, I thought, you know, once this happened, you know, okay, I would be done.
Yep.
Well, but I got that goal faster than I expected, and I'm not done.
Yep.
So it's, you know, these goals are steps being measured, you know, by that invisible pedometer. And ultimately, you know, payoff for me is recognition of every step is important. Every step should feel productive. I mean, it may not feel good, you know, some things are painful, some things, you know, are dangerous. Some things are tragic and they're just a part of your landscape, but understanding what's good, you know, it sounds kind of lightweight to say things like focus on the positive, but focus on the freaking positive.
Yeah.
Anyone can be angry. Anyone can be pissed off and disillusioned with the world. Read history. Everything that's going on now isn't new. You know, it's just variations on a theme that have repeated, you know, in perpetuity. If you want to feel crappy all the time, that you have access to more than enough negative information, negative images, you know, to make that come true.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a badass to face the world with a positive attitude. That's a strong person. That's not somebody who's living in denial. That's somebody who's kicking ass at life.
Yep.
And
I agree.
Payoff to me is the quality of your life. is recognizing that every moment there's amazing things going on around you. It's not being blind to the things that you're dissatisfied with. It's not being blind to the injustices of the world. But the more positive you are, the more equipped you are to make a positive impact on the world.
Yep.
And, you know, that's what it should be all about. I mean, you know, we need to do the things that are gratifying and meaningful for us, but hopefully, because in the process of doing that, Eric, we become better people, we become stronger people, and better, stronger people are better able to take care of other people and better able to change their corner of the world.
Mike, I know we're pressed for time, so why don't you give all your information, and I'll give mine, and if you just hang on the line, man. I just want to say one thing. It's really how much you can take. How much can you really take and measure up? Because I'll tell you what, and I wish we had more time, and we might even have to go into this on a second show, is this. It's like I'm to the point now where you can try any fucking thing you want to do to me, man. I guarantee you I'll crush you back. This is all about momentum like Mike and I talked about. We're going to talk more about this because this gets my blood firing right now, and we're almost done, and I'm really fired. But, Mike, give out everything. I know we can get the book Mind Boss off Amazon, but give all that. I am going to put this show up today, too, because I want to get this out for you, too. So give all your information. Let me get mine. Just hang on a minute, please.
Sure thing, Eric. Appreciate that. The first place I like to direct folks to is MikeGillette.com. That's just because there's free content there. Blog posts, images, life lessons, motivation, basically my thoughts on being strong, cultivating strength in your life. And there's links to all of my social media, and I invite people to check that out as well. Some of the products that I think are particularly helpful and relevant to our conversation today. First off, not everybody likes to read. So the Psychology of Strength program, strengthpsychology.com is where you'll find that, strengthpsychology.com. That is a video presentation along with the workbook that has much of the same information that Mind Boss has. And it's a very intuitive delivery, and I've gotten amazing feedback from it. It has sold in excess of 45 different countries. You know, people all around the world are emailing me about it, which is an amazing feeling. But it also suggests that being awesome is a universal language. Mind Boss, as you say, you can find it on Amazon now. I think BarnesandNoble.com, if not this week, probably next. But very easy to find on Amazon. If you get it, you know, share what you think. I want to hear what people get from that. So that would be awesome as well. Savage Strength program available through Critical Bench. That's Mike Gillette's one of my strength paradigms. My ring training book from Dragon Door, Rings of Power, not for gymnasts, just for people who want to be badass with a very flexible and joint-friendly tool. Some cool exercise variations in there that people probably haven't seen before, but it's all designed for maximum force output. I think that's about it, Eric.
Okay, Mike. This is Motivation Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We're sponsored by www.docsprefer.com. That's Dr. Wong. And he is sponsoring me for Iceland, and I thank him for that. And he is on here monthly. He's a great guy. Sorenx.com, 803-978-2253, extension 111. Obviously, Bert and his father, Richard, are sponsoring me, too, with a nice diamond bar. Bert's on here every month. His father's on every 2 to 3 months. I'd love to have him on more. It's just right now we are hammered, believe me, and it's a good hammering. Don't forget the top 10 ways to build mind and muscle. That's out on FiorellaBarbellCo.com. That's a free downloadable. You know, like Mike and I talk about, it's precision. It's right to the point. It's not. It's no fluff. It's like, you know, it's like you get up in the morning, brush your teeth, man. You know, it's just things that you normally do, but it's just so overlooked. It's so damn simple. So check that out. Don't forget HeartsCollision.com. This is for New York State residents. 518-477-7937. And also our good friend, Donnie Giafardino. www.adexclub.com. That's ADEXclub.com. Strength times muscle, power equals success. Winner's Circle. Check them both out. They're really on their way. We're seed launching them mostly this week. It's all going. I'll have more when I talk to Chris this week. I think they're life-changing. It's the two best things I've done to this point. I've got five more things on the burner ready to go. This place, When it gets to the point where I'm turning the currency I want, you're going to think an avalanche hit you when I get through with it. Don't forget, too, sponsorship, Fiorello Barbell Co., Motivation and Muscle, MDA. I want to help these kids out as much as I can. If you ever get the opportunity to go in one of those places, and I don't know if they'd let you in anymore the way things are in the world, you're going to meet people that, you know, Mike and I talk about being tough. Ha! They make us look like marshmallows, and I'm telling you. And you know what the greatest thing about those kids are? They've always got a smile on their face, man. You know that your life's probably coming to an end any day now, and these kids know this. They're not brain dead at all. But yet, man, they look at life in such a – you talk passion. I'll tell you, I wish I had a third of their passion, and I got a lot, believe me. They're the most beautiful creatures you've ever met in your life, man, and that's the way it is. So stick with us. We're going to be over a million strong. We want to work with you. If you need any branding done, Chris can do that. But remember, we're going to be around for a long time, and we are going to be the go-to spot for everything. I promise you that. So go out to FiorelloBarbellCo.com, MotivationAndMuscle.com. Chris Bigelow does everything here, MonsterDevelopment.com. 800-687-1609. Don't forget, too, FiorelloBarbellCo.com, MotivationMuscle.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Give us a 5-star review. We've got tons of them. We thank you for that. Once again, that gets us out more internationally, and we're all over the place now. And I hope we're a pain in the ass to everybody, too. I really do. Also, too, we're on Facebook at Fiorello Barbell, Motivation Muscle. We're on Twitter at Fiorello Eric. If there's a show you'd like Mike and I to specifically do, you can get a hold of me at Fiorello Barbell and NICAP.RR.com. And I'm going to leave you with a few things. Number one, if someone seeks you out in the gym or the concrete jungle, do not be afraid to speak to them. I mean, you don't know. We just talked about words and phrases and thought and analogy and how it can change you. It can change. Go for the positive. Be a steward of strength. Secondly, as my mom always said to us when we were kids, never be afraid to say hello to somebody or give them a smile. That might be all they get. Once again, I can refer back to the Mind Boss. Go through and read that. It'll make more sense to you. Thirdly, get out tonight, tomorrow, whenever. Take that steel and bust it into pieces. Bend it. All right? Take stones. Turn them into dust. And most of all, I want to just give these four things before we get into my favorite part. Ingrid Markham, incredible girl, big U.S. bobsled champion, gymnast, Olympic weightlifter. She is awesome. I just put her podcast up, and people went berserk when they heard her. She is going to be with us now in 2016 on monthly. She informed me this morning. I couldn't be happier. This girl represents everything I believe in strength and just honor. She's fabulous. Wait till you hear her. Don't forget Train and Gain with Aaron Mackin, who's my co-host on there. The show's doing phenomenal, man, and I couldn't be happier. Basically, if you're interested in getting the training of the day, I've been doing arms the last 2 weeks. I'm going to do forearms this Sunday with her. I don't know what she's going to have, but, man, that girl can cook. So don't forget, Train and Gain with my co-host Aaron Mackin. I'm sorry. Also, Bill Crawford's going to be on Friday, and we're going to do a smoking show on Liechtenstein and Latra. Those are two big places to go lift stones in Iceland, and I've been getting maximum requests about that. Well, you're going to get it, and I've got some pictures to put up too, so check that out. That's going to be Friday morning at 8 o'clock here. So don't forget all those great things, and I'll leave you with this. We have the brand new Hoosa steel stone called Crusher, and it has domination on blood red in on both sides of it. That is what it's all about. We are over a million points strong with everybody. We want everybody to come in, and I will tell you this, nobody, and I will repeat this every show, nobody will ever clip our balls. Mike Gillette, thanks for being on, my friend.
Hey, always my pleasure.
Same here. So for Mike Gillette, this is Eric Fiorello. Thanks for listening. Mike will be on next month. We will, I'm sure, have some screaming stuff to talk about. So everybody, have a great week, and, you know, go out and make a difference in the world. Don't sit on your ass on the sideline and watch it go by. Have a good week.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.